This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Okay, so when you call out a magical spell or try to access this power, you're calling on ET? Please explain.
Yeah, okay. Well, I keep that definition very open, too, and I try and keep it open in that book as well. What I mean, I want to have the broadest interpretation of what I mean extraterrestrial. And I know what you think when you think extraterrestrial. You think of something, some ontological creature that's of some kind of form and substance, at least it's kind of compatible to our own, and dwelling on some other planet. And then the Lovecraftian theme in a lot of his stories where these alien beings colonized the Earth in the past, and they're still living here, hidden in a remote place, and they actually kind of jump-started the evolution of mankind. That's where the whole alien astronaut theory got started, by the way. It got started with Lovecraft. People like Eric von Daniken and then Paulet and Berger, who were two Frenchmen. Well,
there were others. There were others. Not only...
There were others.
Lebrinzi, Lepore Tranche, you know, even, geez, Churchwood, looking at the Maya.
You know where it started out? Lovecraft stuff was written like in the... late 20s and the 30s. He died in 1937. He has a lot of stories like The Call of Cthulhu, Shadow Out of Time, where he actually talks about alien astronauts. And this was picked up by two guys named Paulet and Berger, Frenchmen in the 60s, and they published Morning of the Magicians. And they're the first people to actually formally postulate that alien astronaut theory. And then these other guys picked it up, like Robert Chereau did Life of the Masters of the World. That was in 1967, I think, and popularized it. And then Eric von Daniken and came along in 71, he popularized everything. And what's interesting about him in the introduction to that book, he mentions that he's trying to answer questions posed by those people, those right. other people that I mentioned. So that started everything. Then you have Robert Temple coming along with a serious mystery. And then, of course, you did have Churchward, and then you have the Moo and all those kind of, the Lannis and all that kind of stuff. But Lovecraft actually was a progenitor of that. There's actually a good book on that, by the way, written by a guy that's a notorious skeptic, but it's called The Cult of Alien Gods, and he traces it pretty well in that book. I leave this open here because I don't really care how you interpret it. Now, in Lovecraft's work, you have all three kinds of extraterrestrial entities, and these are the three that I mentioned, I kind of boiled down to. You've got the aliens living on other planets, and then you've got the interdimensional entities, and Lovecraft allows for this possibility, too, that they're just simply things that are in your own mind. And when you do the magical rituals, you're actually accessing higher powers in your mind. Somebody could claim that Aleister Crowley's holy guardian angel was actually Crowley himself, just kind of in his own mind, the way that he perceived himself. So I leave open all three of those views, and we see those three views in Lovecraft's work, and I personally don't care how you want to interpret them. Like I said before, if the magic works, it works, but I'll tell you one thing, it needs an engine to work. And the engines of the extraterrestrial entities, however you define them, and that's the one thing that's missing from these TV shows, from the Doctor Strange, too. Magic's not being fueled by that. It's not really explained how it's being fueled. Like in the Doctor Strange one, he just kind of learns how to manipulate the astral, and then he kind of learns magic. He has kind of an aptitude for it, but they never explain where that magic comes from.
You're putting the astral, then, on another planet?
I don't really know what the astral plane is, if you want my honest opinion. The magicians postulate the astral. You've got like the chaos. They all postulate. They postulate like a mental plane is supposed to be beyond time and space, and that's where we formulate ideas. The gods live there. According to traditional theory, the gods live beyond time and space in some kind of mental plane, and that we can connect to it. And then what happens when you call an entity, it comes to the astral plane. That's a second level reality. And then at that point, it either manifests in the astral plane or in the physical plane, and you're manipulating the astral at that point. So the entity comes to that plane. The chaos magicians, however, have an interesting theory. They've got the same levels, but they don't believe that it's a mental plane. They believe it's primary reality, and there are no gods in primary reality. You could say it's God, but it's actually the void or chaos. Gods don't happen until you get to the astral plane, and then the way the chaos magicians view it, those are all egregores. which are actually self-created entities. And some of them have been out there a long time, and some of them have been worshipped. The chaos magicians would say God himself, the God of Abraham, Jehovah, is actually an egregore that was created a long time ago, and it's just drawn power from the fact that all these churches and all these worshippers believe in it, and so it's actually achieved some kind of level of reality. No, but the chaos magicians would say that none of these have any absolute reality. Anything on the astral does not have absolute reality. Human beings don't have absolute reality, and our minds don't have absolute reality. You know, so they would argue, the traditional would argue, that we're actually dealing with things that live on the astral plane, or at least come to the astral plane. But you can't quantify any of that kind of stuff. I mean, you could say that there are entities living in the mental level or in the primary level, or you could say there are entities living on the astral plane, or you could even say that they're manifest in the physical plane, which is what aliens would be. But there's no real way to quantify that or to say for sure what's happening.
I'm trying to put all this together. We have maybe another plane, another dimension. We've got ET. So let's talk about ET a little bit, because I think we're kind of losing focus on that. So are we talking about physical entities that live on another planet, maybe in another star system? Is that what we're talking about when we talk about ET?
It's very possible that's what we're talking about. No way to verify that, though.
Okay, but I'm trying to find the connection of why this is assumed. I know about the ancient astronauts, and you mentioned von Daniken and all the other people. Of course, Desmond Leslie, who wrote the introduction to Flying Saucers Have Landed, the George Adamski Contact book, also wrote about those things. So this is something we've talked about for a long time, and we like to think about the interactions. But part of it is, would we, as Arthur Clarke has said in so many words, view this advanced technology as expressions of magic? It may just be highly advanced beings from other planets can do amazing things with their technology, and we look at them in their reality-bending ways as magicians?
Well, you know how I view it. I am not so sure that we're actually asking the right questions sometimes. This is going to get a little strange, or if we really know what the proper questions are. I know it's comforting to kind of think that, you know, there are higher beings that have better technology, or they're more cognitively developed, and that's kind of a nice thought. You know, they're out there because then they can help us or they can mentor us or something like that. But I'm not so sure. You know, when I look at the experiences, like the magical experiences and the weird interpenetrating of reality, which is very similar to, like, the way quantum physics describes the reality at the subatomic level, it's very similar to that when you do magical experiences. And a lot of the experiences I've read that people have had that have contacted aliens, the experiences are very similar to that, too. There does seem to be, like, almost a magical component to that as well. And I'm not sure exactly what's happening here, but what I think it is the question that we should be asking is, like, it's just a change in perception, basically. See, quantum physics has one really interesting rule. Whatever's not forbidden is compulsory. And what that means at the subatomic level, if a particle can do one thing, then it has to do everything else that it can do. And the way that I interpret that is that means there are different dimensions and there are different perceptions. And what we do with magic, we train ourselves to perceive things differently. And then when we perceive it differently than the way we've been conditioned, we're being exposed to something. But our minds aren't quite there yet. Our minds are still stuck in the way of viewing things that we were at before. And then we try and fill it up with images to make sense of what we're seeing. And I think that sometimes when we fill up our mind with what we think we're seeing, we sometimes see ET, as you call it. We sometimes see the great old ones, Cthulhu or Yog-Sothoth. Or we just see, like, things in our own mind that we know we've created in our own mind. So it's something that I really can't quantify or actually explain fully. And I don't know if that helps you. Now, I don't view them as all distinct things, so I view them as all being kind of co-penetrating or co-existent in some kind of fashion.
All right, fair enough. We're not going to try to get you to prove that ET exists. We have no idea what form they would take, and it may also be, as we've suggested here in the PowerCast, that what we see as UFOs doesn't represent the real phenomenon. It's just our puny or primitive minds trying to cope with something so far beyond our understanding that we use our cultural conditioning to make them appear into something that makes sense. We've got more to come with John Steadman, and the book is called H.P. Lovecraft and the Black Magical Tradition. And I want to know more about Lovecraft and how we find truths in what he says, and I also want to talk about some of the beings that he mentions in his novels. More to come with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation Analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite. Go to secretsignite.com. That's secretsignite.com. Get your free copy now. Go to secretsignite.com.
Hey, diabetics. Yeah, you. Got a spare hour to waste going to the pharmacy to get your insulin or other meds and supplies every month? I didn't think so. Me either. I've got life going on, which is why I use PillPack. PillPack is an amazing online pharmacy. They package up all my diabetic meds and testing supplies into daily doses and send it to me every month, automatically. All I do is pay my normal copay. PillPack does the rest. I'm serious. This is a free service. They don't even charge for shipping. PillPack handles all the medical insurance stuff and even get with my doctors for my other prescriptions so I don't have to, which is good because that's the stuff I forget. But PillPack remembers everything. They even package up my daily vitamins so I remember to take them too. If you're diabetic, your meds and supplies are life and death, which means you need PillPack. Call right now for this free service. You may even qualify for $25 in free vitamins. 800-560-7310. That's 800-560-7310. Again, 800-560-7310.
Being self-reliant is about being prepared and to do what you need to have your own source of renewable energy. Portable Solar LLC offers the most powerful EMP-hardened solar system on the market that is transportable from place to place, and the best part, it's very affordable. Contact them at PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875. Sol Arc EMP-hardened solar generator, energy insurance for your family or business, call Portable Solar LLC today or go to PortableSolarLLC.com to check out their patent-pending technology.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We have John Steadman joining us, and I want to get more into the works of H.P. Lovecraft. We're having weird connection difficulties, and I have a feeling that the sub-Earth creatures are dealing with
it's
us.
It's Lovecraft stuff, yeah. Yeah,
that's possibly it. John Steadman joins Gene and Chris in the PowerCast. And we have questions from our listeners, very knowledgeable questions we get to in a moment. I'm going to throw something at you, and only because he mentioned Lovecraft, that Lovecraft had it right. And that is a guy who was popular in the 40s and had kind of a cult following in the 50s, 60s, until he died in the 70s, Richard Shaver. Ever hear of him?
No, I haven't.
Okay, he worked with Ray Palmer at Amazing Stories magazine, and they had written fictional stories about an under-earth civilization going back to Lemurian times, involving two races, Deros and Tiros, Deros being the bad guys, the evil ones, and Tiros being the good guys. And Shaver said that Lovecraft, in his fiction, was using this factual basis in some of the creatures he talked about. What do you think?
Well, I never heard that, but, you know, there people are always reading stuff like this into Lovecraft. Lovecraft was an atheist. He didn't believe in gods or gods. He didn't believe in, like, ultimate good or ultimate evil. He believed in cosmicism, basically, and what he thought was a cosmic indifferentism. He felt that the universe was indifferent to mankind and that there was no purpose to life at all, and there were no such thing as supernatural gods or goddesses. And he didn't believe in good or evil. Now, in his stories, he'll have characters that'll say something's evil or something's blasphemous or horrible. So he'll use the terminology of good or evil, but there isn't any really Christian dichotomy in Lovecraft. His best friend, August Derleth, tried to read it in there when he did his own Cthulhu mythos stories, you know, but it's just not there. You know, there is no good or evil in Lovecraft. And what you've got to realize is that Lovecraft is way before his time. I think he's still totally relevant for the 21st century, not just because of the quantum physics, but the way he views reality, and in fact, he's getting people there recognizing that. Now, there's a guy in Egypt, he's a provost at the American University in Cairo. He's a philosopher. He's a speculative realist. And he's actually ranking Lovecraft up there with people like Martin Heidegger and Picasso, you know, who were both two great thinkers about the philosophy of the nature of being in existence. And he puts Lovecraft right up there. But what Lovecraft argues is that reality is actually incommensurable with any attempt that we can represent or even conceive of it. And the human century keeps getting in the way, and that's where the good or evil comes from, because the human century, you ever notice, like, Hollywood will do a movie like the Independence Day? It'll be evil, the evil aliens. And what do? They conceive of evil aliens as things that we find repugnant, big lizards or tentacles or something like that. And then when they do a nice alien, an alien coming to help us, they always make him kind of charming. He always looks like a human, a slightly more educated or intelligent human, a kind of a mentor kind of a figure. Like in The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original Day the Earth Stood Still, with Michael Rennie playing that part. And you notice that those are just human projections put on reality. But what's happening behind it, who can say? And what Lovecraft does in his fictions, and he does this very good, you were talking about the great old ones, right? Cthulhu, for a minute. Have you read The Call of Cthulhu? I'm sure everybody's read that one.
Yes, I have read The Call of Cthulhu.
Okay, think about that story for a minute. Like, in a popular mind, when you're talking about gaming people, or when they're making movies about, or whatever, it's a big monster. You know, it's a big greenish kind of monster with dragon wings and big claws, and its face and massive tentacles. It's a monster, in other words. But that's human-centric. If you actually look at Lovecraft's story, he actually, the way that he presents Cthulhu is very interesting. You know, like a couple, some sailors find this island and it comes up. It's apparently the island of Rylith or something. It's up for a little bit. And Cthulhu comes out into light of day. Now, some of those sailors that have kind of chanced upon this, some of them do see a big monster, a big dragon-like monster. But there's one sailor that doesn't see anything. He's not sure what he's seeing, and the only way that he can describe what he's seeing, he says, a mountain walked or stumbled. A mountain walked or stumbled. That's how he sees Cthulhu. He doesn't see a big monster at all. He sees something, and he's trying to grasp it, and all he can think of is a mountain. Another person actually ends up dying, and he sees Cthulhu as this, as an obtuse angle, pretend to be an acute angle or masquerading as an acute angle. So he sees it as a geometrical experience of some kind.
A large geometrical experience.
Yes, a large one. It's actually like obtuse angle, pretending to be obtuse, and it's like a big, vast thing, and it gets sucked into it, whatever it is. But what Lovecraft is getting at here is that the human-centric, the way we're conditioned to see things, interferes with reality, and this Graham Harman guy who I was talking about, who wrote a book called Weird Realism, Lovecraft and Philosophy, very good book, too, he argues that Lovecraft, throughout his fictions, is actually using different techniques to express the weirdness of reality that we can't get in touch with. Uses like either the elusive method like he does in the Call of Cthulhu, or he uses something called the horizontal method, which is also a cubist method, where he just piles on a whole bunch of things where the mind just can't put them all together, and it's like information overload to the mind to express what they're seeing. But see, Lovecraft is doing that. Now, if you read, this is like in the 1930s, right? If you read Cthulhu Mythos fictions today, they go right back to the same nonsense that they've always been doing. The great old ones are monsters, and they're evil. They're trying to destroy humanity. You know, so they can never get away from that. As long as we're human, we're going to have human-centric monsters.
Yeah.
And it gets even worse. You get vampires, zombies. I mean, that's even worse.
Donald
that's
Trump. Even worse. I mean, we're making monsters out of all sorts of things in this day and age.
Yeah. We are, and it's projections. Those are all projections. So you ever notice that people project things onto this guy? Russia, they project Russia. There's some kind of Russian involvement. Or he's doing this, or he's doing that. And they're projecting it onto him, but the man himself, is that really him? You know, so we have a tendency to do that sort of thing. And the thing that I like about Lovecraft, if you read his fictions carefully, and you study, and you realize he breaks down those human-centric convictions that we have, and that's what magic does too. It teaches us to look at things differently, to perceive things differently.
Well, he definitely was plugged in, I think, to some form of, you know, I hate to use a term like the Akashic Records or something, but when you look at, you know, a late 20s story, a short story like The Mountains of Madness, and then look at what's been going on, you know, currently down in Antarctica. And some of the conspiracy theories that are coming out about why, you know, pivotal figures in culture are in the last 2 years have been shuttled down there and shuttled back. Buzz Aldrin had a heart attack evidently on his trip, and the Russians had to do a flight for life thing to get him out of there after a heart attack. The head of the Russian Orthodox Church has been down there. And all this kind of stems back to that very, you know, my favorite Lovecraft short story, The Mountains of Madness, which all takes place right in that same area, you know, just adjacent to the South Pole. So let's talk about his ability to kind of see through the glass darkly into the future.
Let's do that. Let's look at the glass darkly in our next segment with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com, virtual care anywhere.
When a storm causes power loss for a whole day, it can seem endless. There's a new kind of storm brewing, one that could target our nation's power grid and turn off the power for not just days, but for months or longer. Veteran news anchor Ted Koppel's new book, Lights Out, details this exact scenario. And CENTCOM General Lloyd Austin says, it's not a question of if, but when. That's why Americans are rushing to secure solar-powered generators to provide an endless supply of life-saving electricity without gas, fumes, or noise. And the breakthrough Patriot Power Generator 1500 has it all. Portable and lightweight, providing up to 1,500 continuous watts of clean, quiet, and free renewable solar power. If a blackout strikes, you'll have power for heat, lights, cell phones and computers, and critical medical devices, all from the rechargeable solar power. Our first introduction sold out fast, and with high demand, we can't guarantee keeping the supply in stock. Stay protected with the power you need. The Patriot Power Generator 1500. Right now, enjoy our special easy pay option. Just go to blackout27.com. That's blackout27.com. Blackout27.com.
Hi there, I'm Bob Eubanks. You know, as part of Hollywood for a long time, I've seen my fair share of celebrities get in trouble with the IRS. Well, there's one name I trust, the Tax Defense Group. They're the most trusted name in tax. So if you owe more than $10,000 to the IRS, you really need to call my friends at the Tax Defense Group. Ignoring the IRS is not the solution. They can garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts, seize your home or business. But the Tax Defense Group could put a stop to all of that and tailor a program that would reduce your tax debt to pennies on the dollar. You gotta love that. So don't just take my word for it. Call them. Find out for yourself. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And they're open 24 hours a day because they know that tax debt doesn't sleep either.
Call now for your free and confidential tax analysis from the most trusted name in tax. Call 800-361-6907. 800-361-6907.
Warning. If you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-958-9659. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-958-9659. That's 1-800-958-9659. 1-800-958-9659.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we're exploring all the fascinating things about H.P. Lovecraft and his insights. Chris, you were leading John to something in the previous segment.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about him as a visionary, as someone that was able to tap into the zeitgeist decades before we even knew that, you know, we had these dark kind of areas in our sort of horror closet.
Yeah, I'm not going to dispute anything you say, okay, because the thing great about Lovecraft, he's a major figure. He's a major figure not only as a fantasy writer and as a literary figure. Most camps accept him as like the major 20th century writer. Even some people put him above Edgar Allan Poe. I certainly do that. But he's much more than a major figure, and he's like, it's a vast, I don't know what you want to call it, but he can take any amount of different interpretations and accommodate them all, and then he rises still, and he's still Lovecraft. A lot of people make these kinds of interpretations, like his friend Derleth was arguing that it's like a classic good versus evil. The elder gods are good, you know, and then the great old ones are evil, and it was the conflict between those two. And now you're talking about these ancient things that they're discovering. I reserve judgment on whether these are true or not. There are some occultists that argue that Lovecraft, in fact, was dreaming true, and he was actually in touch with, like, the future and the past, and he actually did get in contact with real extraterrestrial entities, and he actually could foretell the future. And so they place him as kind of like an unconscious occultist, dreaming true. Donald Tyson, the guy that wrote his own version of the Necronomicon, and he's written the Grimoire of the Necronomicon, argues that Lovecraft was actually a practicing magician, but it was a kind of a dreaming, unconscious form of magic. And I'm perfectly willing, if somebody wants to make the argument, he can't prove that, of course. I can't disprove it. And so if a person wants to view it that way, then by all means, that's good. You know, what it means is that we're going to keep talking about Lovecraft. So what I see in the future is that science and magic are going to have to come together. They used to be the same thing in the old days, and then they kind of broke apart during the Enlightenment era. But they're going to have to come together because quantum physics definitions of the universe and of reality are getting more and more magical the more decades that go by. And someday, those quantum physicists are going to need some way to quantify their speculations. They can't do it right now, which is why Einstein got off that bandwagon, because he didn't like speculating beyond things that we could prove, and that's where quantum physics has gone now. It's all speculation. Someday we're going to have to try and find a way to quantify those. And so far, I think the only way we can actually quantify, the closest we can come to it, is utilizing magic. Even though we can't explain why it does what it does, it will allow us to get in touch with these kinds of interdimensional things. And so sometime magic and science are going to have to link up again and have a relationship. And I think we're moving in that direction slowly.
Isn't it fair to say, though, if we're going to start dropping in quantum physics, that maybe magic is just another way of looking at technology and maybe even a more advanced version, because we don't need all the technological stuff. We can use spells instead of gadgetry.
And we're moving in those directions, but we're doing it electronically, but we're still a great deal away from it. And the problem is, of course, that we can create virtual environments, but we can't master artificial intelligence yet. And that's the big sticking point there. Like, we can create virtual entities, and we could argue those virtual entities are similar to the kind of magical entities that we create, but there's one big difference. The things that they create virtually are not artificially intelligent. And the great old ones, or the gods and goddesses that magic deals with, are intelligent, are artificially intelligent. We don't know why they are, but they are. And so there can be a genuine information exchange between magical entities and human beings, but there can't be the same thing with the virtual. And we're not really there yet. I don't know how long it's going to take us to get there, but once when we get there, we're still going to have to find ways to quantify that. So technology is running way behind all that. It's running way behind the speculation.
All right.
You never know when I'm going to shut up. Do you see, I'm a college teacher. I can sit up there and lecture for hours, and I've got a captive audience, and the students can't really do anything until the class is over, you know. So I have a tendency to ramble on and talk forever and ever, and I apologize for that.
Well, I'll tell you something here. I run the board, and I have the power, and I'll interrupt
good,
you when it's
good.
Necessary. Yes, I have the power, good. Unless you're going to use some kind of magical spell that could be invoked through Skype.
Yeah, and plus you can actually edit, too, so that's even more powerful.
Yes, but, you know, I should tell the truth to our listeners. They wonder, what is it that I do to edit the show? And the fact of the matter is, it's very little. I give it a shave and a haircut. I clean it up a little bit, unless someone says one of the George Carlin words. Then it gets to be more involved. I want to ask you just parenthetically, and I want to get also into listener questions that Chris will offer you. That is, how do your students react to all this? Are they aware of it? Because you're an English teacher.
Yeah, I actually teach writing. I teach them how to write. And there's a very clear line there. When I go in there, it's very important for them to see, these are students getting ready to go to the undergraduate university. And so I teach them how to write analytical expository essays or argumentative essays, which is a more aggressive form of an analytical expository essay. I concentrate on that entirely because that's what I'm paid to do, and that's the skill they need. And I would argue it's a number one skill they need in order to succeed in college. And so I teach that, but some of them have probably read my book, and I'll speculate and have some fun in the classroom, tell my little jokes. I have a very macabre sense of humor, and I'll tell my little jokes. But I concentrate basically on teaching them what I'm supposed to teach them, how to write analytical expository essay. I am proposing a class, though, and I'm going to talk to the dean of instruction about that, actually, where I want to teach a class called Speculative Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror in the 21st Century. And then I'm going to have a segment on Lovecraft's works, and then I pick some other science fiction writers, like William Gibson. You guys know William Gibson? Yeah, Neuromancer. He wrote the novel Neuromancer. But he's written several, too. But I'm going to be talking, the class, if they approve this class, it'll be a more speculative class. But my teaching is not speculative. We don't deal with any of this kind of stuff. I'm not being paid to do that sort of thing. I keep the planes very distinct. Aleister Crowley always said you've got to make sure your planes are distinct, and you have to do that so you don't go crazy. If the planes aren't distinct, then suddenly the great old ones will appear to you in the middle of the afternoon at 1 o'clock while you're teaching. You can't have that happen. So you got to keep the barriers between the planes, psychological barriers.
But let me ask you, since you mentioned the fact that you're bringing this up to some degree with your students, have you ever run into anything weird or unusual as a result?
In the classrooms?
Yes.
No, not really. I've encountered some really bad, pathetically written essays, and I've encountered some really pathetically good written essays, you know, but that's the level that I'm at when I teach, so we don't deal with any of this kind of thing. I've never had any kind of odd experience happen in the classroom at all, if that's what you're saying. But those are controlled, you know. I mean, I don't expect them to come unless I set it up or call them. I don't expect things to come in the class. If things start happening, then I need to check myself into a mental institution, you know. So I want to keep those planes distinct.
Well, I can see that, yeah.
That was a good idea.
I need a paycheck. I need a paycheck. They can't have me, like, I certainly can't be evoking elder gods or anything in the classroom. I mean, that might actually get kind of messy because some of those people are perceived as monsters. And if they perceive something as a monster, it's going to act like a monster, which means it'll probably be torn apart. I can't have the reputation of people that take my class risking being torn apart. They would probably put me on administrative leave or just fire me outright. I like the paycheck, okay?
Especially co-eds. I mean, they're so young and cute and innocent. We don't need
them.
They
are cute.
We don't need them.
I don't mind if it's old jaded professors like myself, you know, sure, we've lived for quite a number of years. So, yeah, let's see what it's like being torn apart by an elder god. But I'm not going to have that happen to a 20-year-old if I can avoid it.
Well, the other thing here I want to ask you, and we can go on to the next segment, is this. Are we viewing these creatures with our expectations that they're ugly and gross, not as to what they appear to be? Is that part of the picture there? We'll find out that, and I think, Chris, we'll get to some of your questions, listeners, in our next segment with John Steadman talking about H.P. Lovecraft and magic and all that stuff. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features. And most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know, the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
It's called the Deep State. Barack Obama's most loyal aides still hold office, and they want to stop President Trump. Deep State was first revealed in the runaway New York Times bestseller, Big Agenda. David Horowitz's Big Agenda exposes Obama's government in exile and his shocking plan. Newsmax, Lou Dobbs, Ann Coulter all say you must read Big Agenda at bookstores everywhere, or check out our free offer. Call 800-NEWSMAX, 800-NEWSMAX, or go to BigAgenda411.com. That's BigAgenda411.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-615-7709. That's 800-615-7709. 800-615-7709.
It's called the Deep State. Barack Obama's most loyal aides still hold office, and they want to stop President Trump. Deep State was first revealed in the runaway New York Times bestseller, Big Agenda. David Horowitz's Big Agenda exposes Obama's government in exile and his shocking plan. Newsmax, Lou Dobbs, Ann Coulter all say you must read Big Agenda at bookstores everywhere, or check out our free offer. Call 800-NEWSMAX, 800-NEWSMAX, or go to BigAgenda411.com. That's BigAgenda411.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Chris sounds like he's trying to cast a spell. He's going to spit it out one day and, you know, this is just going to all fall apart. So, what do you think, John Steadman, these ugly creatures, gross, horrifying. Is that the way they are, or is that what we perceive, that we kind of infer this from who and what they're supposed to be?
Well, I think that we just, whatever we see, we bring it with us. You know, we're conditioned. Now, a lot of the times, people that do magical rituals based on the great old ones, they already have preconceptions. And that was a danger that I talked about before when I was in middle school. You know, I had called up the spirit of Barzabel. I had a pretty good idea what Barzabel would look like. And in fact, they have a Golden Dawn ritual for calling up Barzabel. So I'd read all the documents. I'd read Crowley's 777, which has got all the correspondences, so how to decorate your temple, what kind of weapons to use, what kind of incense to burn, what Mars should be doing up in the heavens at that time, what the best hour for doing it. So you read all that stuff, and then you got expectations. And like I said, those rituals justified my expectations. But I'm not really engaged in anything, am I? Like, if you talk to somebody that is justifying your expectations, you're talking to yourself, basically. You're not learning anything, right? And so what I think is a lot of times people that get involved in magic, they've already read the Call of Cthulhu. They've seen the games. They've read books. They've seen the movies. When a Cthulhu comes up, it kind of looks like that because they're predisposed to look like that. However, in my rituals, the one that I'm putting together into the Grimoire, it's like a narrative. What happens, you do the language, you recite the words of power, you do the gestures, very minimal use of magical weapons. You can conjure whatever you need, just like they did in Doctor Strange. And what will happen is that you have an experience, and it kind of forms like a narrative, and it might not have anything to do with what your preconceptions are about Cthulhu. And each time you do the ritual, you have a different experience. And so you're gaining more knowledge. you might be gaining power too, but it's not the kind of power where you go, I've got the power of Cthulhu, now I'm going to blast you. Like in the Doctor Strange, I've got the power of the dark dimension, so a Dormammu is behind me, so I'm going to do this or that. It's not like that at all. It's not good or evil when we're beyond time and space, because time and space is not good or evil, but time is not really good or evil either. It's human behavior. And when we get past human behavior and human-centric things, we've left all that behind, you know. So whatever people do, if they've got preconceptions, they'll bring the preconceptions. They'll see Cthulhu the way that they're conditioned to see him. And maybe if they get lucky, they'll see it differently, and they'll be having a genuine narrative. They'll have an original relationship with the universe, which is what I think is the goal of magic.
And that kind of leads me, that's a perfect kind of opening for some listener questions. This one comes from Red, who's been posting since the end of November 2009 at forum.theparacast.com, where our listeners get a chance to post questions for our guests. And Red has come out, he's posted over 500 messages, and he kind of has broken this up into three different sort of questions, really. Question two, I want to start with that. It's pretty well documented that H.P. Lovecraft cribbed quite a bit from the Encyclopedia Britannica. He reached out to one of his pen pals who had an occult library and asked to borrow some of the titles after Lovecraft wrote the disastrous horror Red Hook, from which all the occult references have been taken from the encyclopedia. I guess he learned from his mistakes. As a good chunk of his mythos was established before that book, how do you feel Lovecraft managed to tap into the beginnings of a workable magical system with practically no real functional knowledge of the occult?
He never did. The caller is perfectly right about that. He actually mined the Encyclopedia Britannica. I talk about this in Chapter 2, by the way, where he gets his information from. He did ask his friend Clark Aston Smith to suggest books of magic. And in my book, I explore exactly the documents that he read, the books. And he had a very superficial knowledge of magic. And what he was doing, he was mining that for atmosphere and for words and for concepts that he could kind of use in his stories, kind of like as a justification for what he was actually trying to create. So he wasn't really seriously interested in practicing magic. He never formulated a magical system.
So they were literary devices, basically.
They were literary devices. He actually stole a conjuration out of there, and it's supposed to be a really damnable, as he would call it, a damnable conjuration for doing something. It was actually a Latin evocation that he got from Eliphas Levi. He didn't get it from Eliphas Levi's original document, the Transcendental Magic, but he actually got it from the Encyclopedia Britannica version of that, and I talk about all that in my book. And what it was it was supposed to be a really evil conjuration, and it was actually just a conjuration for calling up the different elementals, for alchemical kind of things, calling up,
right.
So you're calling up elementals for fire, water, air, and earth, and there was nothing really damnable about it all. In fact, I dissect a couple of those in Chapter 2 and show that they really weren't that. Like, he would heap all those words in there, and the words didn't mean it. He didn't know what the words meant, you know, but most of them were like old 10th century grimoires that had words like different names to God or different names to angels, and he didn't even know that. He just kind of dumped it in there. So it was like what you said, it was a literary device, but Lovecraft did not found a magical system. What he was doing, he was trying to find some way to get his narrators into the kind of experiences I'm talking about. He used magic to do that. Sometimes he didn't, like in the thing you're talking about, your favorite, and that's considered one of his best stories, by the way, the Mountains of Madness. That one, he stays on the regular physical plane there. I mean, they discover ancient astronauts that colonized that before the Earth, and there's no magic.
Yeah,
it's
sci-fi. I mean,
it's sci-fi. And you know, the weird thing about it is, like, I got a really good endorsement from S.T. Joshi, who's actually an atheist, and he doesn't believe in anything occult, and he had to kind of grit his teeth when he read my book, but he gave me a good endorsement anyhow. But anyhow, he makes the argument, and his argument's wrong. He makes the argument that Lovecraft was moving away from magic, and was demythologizing his mythos, and so it was all going to be like aliens. It was all going to be extraterrestrial aliens. And he argues that we see Lovecraft moving away from magic and stories like that. But the way that this falls apart is
that
he was really, I would disagree, too, because we'd have to see a consistent pattern. Like, you'd have to see a pattern like the Dunwich Horror. It's pure magic in the Dunwich Horror. After the Dunwich Horror, when you start doing the Whisper in Darkness, it's also extraterrestrials. And then the Mounts of Madness.
Yeah,
and
he jumps around. There's no curve going on.
There's no curve. Like, you'll see a couple stories that are completely science fiction. The Color Out of Space is completely science fiction. Something comes out of space, it goes back. But then, what do you see? Like, later on in 1933, after these, you see him writing The Thing on the Doorstep, which is about a magical practitioner who actually possesses the body of his daughter. So it's about magical possession there. And then you've got, like, The Shadow of Time, and there's another extraterrestrial one. And then The Haunter of the Dark, which was his last story in 1925, that's pure magical. Like, the person conjures up using a trapezoid, he conjures up a magical entity. So Lovecraft jumps back and forth. And what I think he's trying to do, he's trying to use different methodologies, different narratives to actually express things that are inexpressible, but things that fascinate him completely. Things that he dreamed about at night. And he wanted to share those dreams with us, too. In the daytime, Lovecraft was an atheist and a materialist. At nighttime, he couldn't control what was going into his dreams, and he wanted to share those with us. And when he did it, sometimes it came out scientific, and sometimes it came out magical. He never once devoted himself entirely to one point of view or the other point of view, and that's why I think he's so strong, why the Dichotomy in Lovecraft is so strong. He never resolved that conflict between the night side and the dark side, and I think that's why he's so powerful, because with all the rest of us, that's the way we are, too. I believe that's the way we all are.
And you can say that about Stephen King, too, in some ways, for someone that has had such a prodigious output. You know, you can always kind of pigeonhole him in a horror sense, but where that horror goes, it shoots out tendrils, Cthulhu face tentacles, all through every genre out there, and he borrows and steals liberally. And I think, obviously, Lovecraft must have been a real, you know, early, very powerful influence on him.
But do you see where the horror is? The horror isn't in the monsters. The horror isn't in people being torn apart. The horror,
no, the horror
is in
the human condition.
The human condition and the fact that just a slight change in perception and then it's all different and we don't really understand what's happening, but we're certainly not in control anymore. We're very minor, a very minor player. And then Lovecraft is constantly taking us to look out at the cosmos itself. And if you think about the cosmos, my God, it's frightening out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've only been on the Earth for a small amount of time. Another 15 billion years or so, we're going to have the Great Crunch where the Great Bang reaches its final extension and pulls back. If the sun hasn't gone nova before then, we're goners. We're goners, right?
So we're goners way before that. There's going to be some celestial, you know, traffic crash with an asteroid.
That is a horror, and that Lovecraft expresses so well, and why some other writers just can't do it. I mean, look at The Walking Dead on TV. They're worried about a bunch of zombies, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, before the zombies take over the show, we've got a break.
They already have.
With Gene and some strange creature, you're in.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X-large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Did you know there's a new group of water contaminants with unknown health effects? These emerging contaminants lurking in your water may include prescription, over-the-counter drugs, and new types of herbicides and pesticides. ProPure's Improve Pro 1G 2.0 filter meets NSF 401 standards to help reduce these emerging contaminants. To find out more, visit your authorized ProPure dealer or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to LibertyOnCall.org. That's LibertyOnCall.org.